it's worth noting in this next section that Paul is still giving instructions to Timothy, but he's, again, just like the section before it that we just went through last time, where he talks about how to correct, urge, appeal to various groups of people in the church, older men, older women, younger men, younger women. As he talks about how to appeal to them, he transitions into a section specifically about this delicate and needy group within the church. What we're going to do with this 13 or so verse section, we're going to camp out tonight just in verse 4. I don't know when I'm ever going to get to preach again to a group of young adults about their obligations to their parents. So this is just a unique opportunity to think for all of us with aging parents as we kind of, you know, are in the early years of adulthood, get to think now about our obligations to our parents. And that's really what this passage is going to do for us. It's going to give us four elements of familial care for Christian widows. Four elements of familial care for Christian widows. Let me just give them all to you up front. These four elements of familial care for Christian widows include the responsible parties, the obligatory priority, the expected practice, and then finally, the acknowledged pleasure. So the responsible parties, the obligatory priority, the expected practice, and then the acknowledged pleasure is how this these particular instructions end. So I'll read the passage starting in verse 1 of chapter 5, which we've already reviewed, and we'll read all the way through, we'll read through the entire section, but hone in on verses 3 and 4. Do not sharply rebuke an older man, Paul tells Timothy, but rather appeal to him as a father to the younger, as a father to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters in all purity. Honor widows who are widows indeed, but if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. Now, she who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone has fixed her hope on God and continues in entreaties and prayers night and day. But she who gives herself to wanton pleasure is dead even while she lives. Prescribe these things as well, so that they may be above reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. A widow is to be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been a wife of one man, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. But refuse to put younger widows on the list, for when they feel sensual desires in disregard of Christ, they want to get married, thus incurring condemnation because they have set aside their previous pledge. At the same time, they also learn to be idle as they go around from house to house, and not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. Therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach, for some have already turned aside to follow Satan. If any woman who is a believer has dependent widows, she must assist them, and the church must not be burdened. so that it may assist those who are widows indeed. Some interesting and lengthy instructions here. Where Paul starts in verse 3 is with this command to honor widows who are widows indeed. The rest of the passage lays out the criteria for how Pastor Timothy is supposed to make sure the church does this. Where he starts is where we'll stay tonight. So, four elements of familial care for Christian widows. First, the responsible parties mentioned in verse 4. As Timothy instructs the church and ensures that their widows, who are actually widows, who are true widows, so he gives a caveat there. What makes someone a widow deserving of the church's care is not simply that she has lost her husband. I mean, that is the definition generally of a widow, is a woman whose husband has died. But he's speaking specifically of the church's obligation to widows, to what he calls honor them, verse 3. And any widow who receives the kind of honor, care, you know, full orbed financial, temporal care from the church, they must be widows indeed. And so he's going to draw a distinction in verse 4 for what family is obligated to do. And that's what he gives first as the responsible parties when he says, if any widow has children or grandchildren. Those are the specific responsible parties that Paul draws attention to. Children and grandchildren. These are the specific children and grandchildren, obviously, of this woman. We talked before in chapter 2, you may remember, of as Paul lays out what men and women should be doing in this war for souls, right? We're all members of the church. What men and women should be doing. Men lead in wielding the weapon of prayer. Women have a role to play in the home, not in leadership in the church. Not teaching, but rather bearing children and demonstrating the godliness that ought to accompany their bearing of children. And so we see that this there's a group of women that Paul knows exists in the church in Ephesus who have lost their husbands and need to be cared for. The priority, the responsibility rather, falls not to the church, but their descendants. The very descendants that they've born and raised up, children and grandchildren. Could extend by implication to great-grandchildren, but it's those who have come from this woman, those whom she has raised. The obligatory priority is that next phrase, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family, etc. They must first learn. There is an obligation that he puts first for this group. These descendants of this woman who has been left alone, whose husband is no longer there to care for her, the children and grandchildren must learn. This is not an option. This is an obligation. And it's first. It's not the church first. And so it's that's what makes it a priority. So this is four sort of characteristics of this obligatory priority. It's universal, it's required, it's preferred, and it's learned. It's universal in that it's they. Just generally speaking, any and all children of this woman, any and all grandchildren, this obligation is universal in the sense that it falls to all of them. it falls to all of them. The children, all the children, all the grandchildren have to make sure that this woman is cared for. It's required, as we saw, he uses the word must. It's not an option. It's not a suggestion. This is something that must take place. It's the preference. It comes first. And it's learned. It's interesting that he says they must first learn to do this. They must learn to do this. That implies a relationship of time, right? This has a start date. And it's something that continues on. Something that they gain and grow in their capacity to practice the very things that are he's going to mention next. It's not necessarily something that they have the corner on to start with, but it's something that they must learn to do when the time comes. When this woman loses her husband, this is something that they must then adopt and learn. Question?
My translation says, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents. So I guess I'm confused because it says, but if a woman has children or grandchildren, let them, which the them is the children and the grandchildren.
Yep.
And then to show godliness to their own household. So like when I first read that, I thought that meant like their own household, but you're saying that means something about taking care of the widow?
That's in the context. That's the household, the family that he's speaking of. The same word is used in chapter 3:15, right? The church is the household of the living God.
So is he talking about the church?
So he's not talking about the church. I'm just, the household of God is the family. It's another word of considering family.
Is it his family or
the kid's family in the terms of what Paul means is the widow. So the widow would have been considered then a part of the children's family. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So learn to show piety to their own household and make some return to their parents. Their household and their parents are synonymous terms in this context. Yeah. Those two things, to practice piety in regard to their own family, and then the following statement, to make some return to their parents, is restating the same principle.
Are you saying it has to do with the widow?
The family and the parent are both references to the widow.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yep.
Yep. And these are the very things that they're supposed to learn to do. I mean, it's not that they've always been doing this, but they've got to cultivate an ability in this specific arena. And then that's what we get next, the expected practice. And we've got two things falling or describing that we just read with those two phrases, the expected practice. Did you have a question?
Well, you want to I was just going to ask, could it be like in this instance of, you know, you're a child of your parents. So say your father died and it's like you have to practice piety in regard to your own family of like Emily and your children, but that also includes your mom now too.
That's a true statement. That's not what Paul's saying here. I do think that he actually mentions the household in that sense of, you know, wife, your own wife and children.
Yeah.
Later in the passage. But here, the reference to family or household as well as parent is the same referent. The expected practice includes piety in regard to their own family and making some return to their parents. And I think that's a restatement of the same principle. The idea here is that they're practicing providing for them, caring for them in whatever ways are needed, that if this woman didn't have children, and the widows who don't have children to do these things, that then falls to the church.
I see.
Yep. The term piety, it's funny, we've been using that word, but here it is explicitly in the text, right? The church is supposed to be practicing piety-produced love. Here, the word that's used has reference to showing significant or special honor. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with religion or religious overtones, right? We think of he's pious or religious, that has a religious feel sense to it. This doesn't always have that same significance. Here, to learn to practice piety in regard to their own family just has to do with showing significant or a special type of honor to someone. So learning to practice that kind of honor, showing that kind of honor, specifically to the widow, to the woman who's lost her husband. Children and grandchildren must learn to do this, to show this kind of honor and care for the widow. And this gets further defined in the next term, make some return to their parents. So not only does it reveal personal honor, but it repays due care, the care for parents that is due them. Make some return to their parents. The idea is that the parents have spent their lives giving to the child, and now in the later years of the parent's life, the children have an opportunity to return the favor, to make some return to their parent. It's like the parent's been investing, now it's your turn to give back. Does that make sense to everybody so far?
So this is only in the case of a widow, right?
That's very interesting, right?
Okay.
Not a widower.
Well, it's confusing because if you're talking about...
Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second. I want to answer that. Were you going to comment? Question?
I'm just confused because if he's talking about the widow, why didn't she show godliness to the widow and make some return for the widow?
Are you asking about the two statements that we're talking about?
Isn't anyone else confused? Or just,
I'm not sure what your confusion is or what you're saying.
Can you ask your question again?
Like, I'm just confused because you keep talking about it like this is about the widow, but it says it's talking about the household of the parents.
Okay, step back for 1 second. Who are these instructions written to?
Timothy.
And Timothy is doing what? Making sure, yeah, as a pastor, that these things are happening among the members of the church. So the command is to honor widows. Timothy, honor widows. Who are widows indeed? Who are truly widows? The way you do that is if anybody has children, though, make sure that they're the ones making the return to their parents. There's a class of people who are true widows. He says in verse 5, she who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone, or could be translated, who is a widow indeed who has been left alone, right? He's defining who's actually a widow. There's widows, all kinds of women who've lost their husband, but I'm speaking in a specific sense of who's truly a needy widow
without
any other help, right? They've been left all alone, he says in verse 5, has set her hope on God and continues in literally the entreaties and the prayers night and day. Probably the entreaties, the requests, the prayers of a woman who has no other source of provision whatsoever. Example, Ruth and Naomi in the book of Ruth. They go to Moab, Naomi and her husband and their two sons. They go to, they leave the famine that's happening in Israel during the time of the judges. They go to Moab. The two sons marry Moabite women. There's all kinds of problems with them having left the land, with marrying foreign men or women, which they were commanded not to do. All three men die, and then you have three widows left. Anybody remember what Naomi told her daughters-in-law to do? And go where? Go back home. Go back to your parents. You go back to your family. I'm a widow too. I can't do anything for you. There was no way for these women, for widowed women, to provide for themselves in that time, or it was extremely difficult and rare that an older woman would be able to provide for herself. She spent her life, presumably, raising a family, being provided for, overseeing other aspects of a home. She's in her older years. She's frail. How's she going to provide for her hand for herself by working with her hands? And so this woman, this class of women, all throughout the Old Testament, are told, Israel's told to provide for them, right? You see that sort of the four classes of people: widows, orphans, foreigners, and who am I forgetting?
Sojourners,
maybe, yeah. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But it's a class of people that don't have the same access in Israel, in the land, right? They have more needs, and they're unable to provide for themselves. And so God, even in the Old Testament, all throughout, instructs his people to have mercy on them, be compassionate, be generous. Boaz, in the book of Ruth, is practicing that. He's a righteous man, loves the law. Even though it wouldn't be technically his own descendants, because he would have children for Ruth's first husband, right, under the kinsman redeemer statutes, he's righteous, and so he marries her and raises up offspring, who ends up being King David and then Jesus, right? So when Paul here in this context talks about widows who are widows indeed, he's not just saying, hey, not just any woman who's lost a husband, but the ones who are truly needy, who are like real widows, widows for real, right, is the idea. So when he says that the children, the grandchildren, as they're able, must learn to practice piety in regard to their own family, Pastor Timothy, don't make sure the church honors those widows. Make the children honor those widows. And to make some return to their parents. For this is acceptable in the sight of God. It's a pretty simple principle that Paul's articulating here. But it's profound in a sense that you think of what is actually happening in the church, is that a family in the church, you think of two generations, maybe three in the church, of believers. Now, this is all in the first 35 years after Jesus' death. So Christianity is still relatively new. But if God were to save grandparents and children and grandchildren in some instances, then as Paul is helping instruct Timothy, these regulations for a New Testament church that's going to help the church run at its most effective level of ministry. You've got qualified elders, qualified deacon leadership. You've got false teachers being sat down, so the error is no longer being taught. You have men leading in prayer. You have women who are practicing godliness and working that out in the home as they raise children. right? All of the things that we've discussed, you got the leaders correcting and instructing everybody appropriately, like family. And what else is helpful is if the resources that the church has don't go to any and every woman who's lost a husband. And he makes that point at the very last verse as he concludes this section in verse 16. If any woman who is a believer has dependent widows, even she must assist them, and the church must not be what?
Burdened.
It's just a responsibility. Not that it's an unwanted responsibility in that sense, but it is a weight to carry. The church has to carry the burden of women who need to be provided for, widows who need to be provided for. And he says, don't make the church do that, so that the church, it, may assist those who are widows indeed, who are actually widows. And we don't have a shortage of resources, because women who have children and grandchildren are being provided for by the church. Don't list them, right? And then he adds a bunch more criteria that we'll get to. Got to be over this age, this kind of woman, right? And those types of things.
So, is this mainly Paul instructing Timothy to teach this to Gentiles specifically, since you said this was a lesson that was reiterated in Israel?
This would have been for the entire church that he has oversight over. So this is what Timothy's job would have been, to practice with the church. What's interesting about this passage is when you start thinking about, well, believing children, unbelieving children, whose responsibility is it to care for widows? And it doesn't say. It doesn't say, hey, make sure that the Christian, make sure that Christian children care for widows. But this is if the criteria in verse 4 is if any woman has. So take a Christian widow with unbelieving children. Whose obligation is her care? Well, it's her children. She has children. So pastor, you know, Timothy wouldn't have had a phone, walk to her child's house and make sure that her unbelieving child, you know, help him know his obligation before God to his mom.
Was this like a big issue in the world at the time?
It must have been. Just considering, I mean, you look at it on the page of your Bible, there's not more instruction given to any specific group in the church. Maybe false teachers, what to do with false teachers in chapter 1, and then the repeated instructions throughout. But you do get the sense that this is significant enough to include this many words to the church in Ephesus. And then you think about specific New Testament examples. Even during the time of Jesus' life, where's Joseph? Presumably he's dead. He's never mentioned after Jesus' childhood. And what does Jesus do even as he's hanging on the cross? Is he entrusts Mary to John, the disciple, instead of his own brothers. He's like, putting you in the most trusted hands that I know of, John. Right? So yeah, it must have been a significant issue.
Was there anything going on in that time that why all these young men are dying?
Isn't like life?
Life expectancy.
Way shorter.
Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps. There doesn't seem to be like a significant event or anything in that sense that, you know, is wiping men out by the by the bushel.
Still an obligation in that context, or is it solely widows who are
So this would come down to needy widows.
Okay.
Now, maybe money's no issue, but if there are other types of care that she needs, aging parents are going to need to be, there's going to need to be oversight to make sure that they don't get swindled, that they're not taken advantage of, business that they need attended to, don't let people take advantage of them. So those kinds of things would certainly fall to the children and grandchildren. Yep. And it could look different for each family. You know, what kind of care do they need? Recently, a couple in our church bought a second house, allowed their dad and father-in-law to move in, had that house to himself, and when it proved to just be too unmanageable for him to live on his own, then because of various factors, including what would be best for their family unit, relationship, and various factors, they took it upon themselves to oversee his moving into some type of assisted living facility, and they were heavily involved in those things. So in that way, they are bearing the burden of caring for him. So this is expected. This is just something that children and grandchildren, the descendants of aged parents, have the privilege of taking care of. They make some return to their parents. For this is acceptable in the sight of God. And that's why Timothy is supposed to be making sure that this is happening. So God sees and God approves of this very practice. The descendants of older people caring for them. John Calvin helpfully said this: not to show gratitude to our ancestors is universally acknowledged to be monstrous. For that is a lesson taught us by natural reason. So it doesn't even take regeneration to understand that this is expected. This is the right thing to do. As natural as it is for children, obey your parents, honor your parents, this is just clear. Yep.
The phrase, and to make some return to the parents, verse 4, do we know the extent of what's expected? I definitely know people from my age that feel the obligation to provide for their parents once they retire.
So you're saying, say that one more time.
I mean, I know people that have the expectation that they're supposed to provide for their parents once their parents retire.
Oh, that's the parents' expectation?
Fully.
That's the parents' expectation?
Yeah.
Is that their children provide for them?
Yeah, the parents and the children, I guess, feel that way.
Yep, there are some cultures. I just talked to Carla Walker earlier this week that in her family, some women expected the educated younger generation coming up to just care for them, and I don't have to work. And Carla and Steve, being a godly couple, had to help that particular family member understand that this is actually not godly. This is not right. This is not our calling in life. If you can still work, you know, if you're a younger widow, not according to Paul, over 60, right? You can still work. You need to go to work, and not just depend on us while you fall into the various sins that Paul mentions in this passage, learning to be gossips and busybodies and those kinds of things. So just because you're a widow doesn't make you needy. Just because you're retired doesn't make you needy. This isn't an excuse for parents not to be wise and saving for retirement and, you know, providing for themselves if they're able beyond a working age and those kinds of things, right? It doesn't remove our responsibility, but Paul actually goes at length to show this woman just really has no other means. And if there are other means, then gracious parents should avail themselves to it, right? It's not like a free-for-all because I'm old now or anything like that. Did that make sense?
In verse 16, the word burden, let the church not be burdened. Is that mainly the financial burden, or is it just like everything, what you were talking about?
It would include certainly finances. Acts 6 talks about the church's distribution for the widows in Jerusalem, that there was a food distribution, right? So it's beyond just purely money, but would include food, other needs related to health, certainly, if these are older women and those kinds of things. Yep. And the church would have to carry that burden for women who didn't have any other means. And really, once we finish going through this passage, you'll get the sense that there's not that many women like this in the church. And that was the point, is to make the standards high enough, narrow enough, that if the church was going to carry a full-time burden, then it was going to have to be for a significant need, for the right woman, the kind of woman who you would say, we can't lose her. We actually need her. She's such an asset to the church. She's such an integral part of what we do as a ministry. What would we do without her? And Dorcas is an example of that in Acts, right? So much so they're like begging Peter, come resurrect her from the dead. We need her. And he does. Yeah. So, four considerations for you, young adults. Early stages of adult life, maybe you've never ever considered taking care of your parents one day. Maybe that's something that's never crossed your mind. Maybe you're hearing this and thinking, you mean I actually have to do that? What? Hopefully that's not your thought. But here are just a few considerations that this passage brings to mind. Consider God's providential choice of your family. Consider God's providential choice of your family. You didn't choose your family. Your family didn't even choose you, unless you're adopted. Maybe they did choose you out of a lineup. I don't know, Kate, how did that work? You're here, so God has providentially chosen you for the specific parents that you have, right? That in itself, just that principle, obligates you in the passage, in the ways that this passage outlines. And praise God. God gave me the parents that I have. And so he knew that he had already written 1 Timothy 5 when he picked my family for me. And so he has obligated me to honor these specific people. Also, consider your parents' past care for you. You know, when Paul says to make some return to their parents, the child that's going to be most eager and ready to make some return to their parents and practice piety toward their own household is going to be the one who's already filled with gratitude for the investment their parents have made into them. The more aware you are of the investment your parents have made, the ways that your parents have sacrificed earthly comforts, you know, new car, new clothes, whatever it is, time spent together as a married couple to raise you well. If you consider those things well now, then you'll be ready and eager to care for your parents when the time comes. Also, thirdly, you could consider your current relationship with your parents. You should consider your current relationship with your parents. As an adult, do you seek to know them now? Do you take an interest now in your parents? Maybe you're distant from them and you don't live in close vicinity. All of us can't go to the same church. You know, the Yorks, the Demarests, the Kelsos, the Dudleys. That's pretty cool. The Hornets. Two believing parents. Super sweet. Draw near to your parents. Befriend them now. Do you welcome experienced input and or godly counsel from them now when it would be useful? If they have godly counsel to offer, if they're not even believers, but they have experience in some area, do you actually welcome them into your life in those ways? That'll endear them to you and you to them in ways that'll be helpful down the road when they're older. Do you labor for their godliness by speaking the truth to them in love now in ways that are appropriate to your season of life? And then finally, just a final consideration for young adults is consider now how you might prepare to care for your parents in the future. I mean, that takes some serious maturity to be thinking now, my parents are going to get old. Time and chance happen to all of us. How am I going to care for them in the future? What kinds of things do I need to be preparing for? Or that Michaela's just going to do it.
She's a chaplain.
So things that you could do now, like grow in biblical wisdom and godliness. That seems maybe impractical, but it's not the decisions that have to be made for older parents, financial decisions, decisions about the best ways to care for them, their health. I mean, those things aren't easy decisions. To be growing in wisdom now will make wisdom easier then. You know, it just won't come to you because you need it all of a sudden if you haven't been practicing making biblical wise decisions now. That's helpful. Are you maturing in such a way now that's an example to older saints? It is not a mystery why old people are kind of stereotyped as being grouchy and ornery. It's common. You think of the impact on older parents who can tend to be more stubborn, less likely to listen, harder to live with. Well, if you're practicing being an example for older saints in the church, older people in general, are you living in such a way now that would command their admiration? That would cause them to seek counsel from you because they see how the Lord's working in your life? That's going to come in handy in the future. If they already think you're wise, not a knucklehead, right? Childish leader. And even thinking about things like your current saving and spending habits, do you spend and save in such a way that facilitates caring for the needs of others? Not in a comprehensive way, like you would need to go care for a parent later. But Ephesians 4 lays down a principle that the thief should no longer steal, but do an honest day's labor with his own hands, working with his own hands, so that he has something to share with all. Do you practice that now? You'll be more ready to share when your parents need it, if you're practicing that already. Like I said at the start, these are not common things for our culture. As time goes on, we sort of see just an entitled generation of people who feel like, I don't have any obligations to anybody but myself. My happiness is the only thing that matters. And if mom and dad don't like it, I will cut them off. You're nothing to me. The dependence that the systems of this world, of our country, have instituted make it a little bit easier to distance yourself from family. Right? You almost feel like, I mean, in this day, if you didn't have family, you were going to die. So it was important to stay close to family, to actually not burn those bridges with family. Now it feels like that's not so much the case, because you have, you know, organizations or government handouts, and I don't need family. I can make it on my own anyway. That can't be the attitude of Christians, because just like everything else written in this letter, the purpose of what was written is that the church would practice piety, produce love. Timothy's supposed to shepherd the church to practice piety, produce love. And as we learn from chapter 3, 14 and 15, God's reputation and God's truth is riding on the conduct of the church. And so your eagerness, your willingness, your determination to care for parents when that time comes, who can't care for themselves, is a tremendous opportunity to bear witness to you serving the living God and upholding his truth in a evil day, in a perverse world. Any last questions? Great question.
So, yeah.
It's a great question. My answer in this moment is I don't know. Certainly, if you were a cousin or in some way removed, but you willingly, apart from any obligation before the Lord, still chose to bear that burden, mm-hmm. that would certainly be an opportunity. To practice these same things that you would with a parent who you were obligated to. But that's a good question. I don't know. It may be, just again, looking at the passage, the obligation is to make some return. So I think that at least assumes a closeness that they've invested in you. You know, is the assumption. But, yeah, there could be some interesting things to think through there as well. Okay, let me pray. God, thank you so much for your word. Even in a passage like this that gives us an opportunity to pause and think about an area of life that if we weren't working through your word verse by verse, we probably wouldn't think about otherwise. or think about very long. So it's a, we just marvel at your wisdom to write these things for us, to preserve your word for us. And thank you for the opportunity that we get to spend time at length just considering what these instructions meant in Ephesus in the first century, to Timothy, to Paul, to the congregation there, and as well 2,000 years later to us. It's equally relevant and pertinent, and what a tremendous testimony to your power and your authority and your brilliance to pin your word in the ways that you have. Thank you, God, and we pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.